Okay. I, first of all, want to congratulate all of you for being on this call tonight, because what you do at the beginning of the year sets the tone for the whole year. And creating a clutter-clearing plan up front at the beginning of the year is going to arm you to have the best year of your life. Since you're on this call with me, I'm going to assume you set your intention to start the year on the right clutter-clearing foot so yes. that you can have more clarity, be more productive, and experience more successes in every area of your life in the new year. So that's what I'm assuming. You wouldn't be taking your time right after the holidays to listen to me unless you really want something. And I think that's very exciting. So I'm going to share with you a couple of major recommendations that I have for how you can think about this year and the things you can do to make clutter clearing an integral part of everything you do this year. And at the end, we'll have questions as usual. First of all, at the beginning of the year, and I recommend that you set your intention. And your intention is going to differ from everybody else's because it's kind of a personal thing. You all have different clutter challenges. Some of you are mostly organized and have some pockets that really bug you. Others of you may have a space that's, oh my God, just because of a variety of reasons. Maybe you're chronically disorganized, or you've had a bad year, or you've had health issues. There are a lot of reasons people have clutter back up on them. But your intention is going to be different one from the other. There's not a set intention to have. And some of you who were on the Shoot for the Stars teleseminar will probably remember some of this. I'm going to go over again that an intention is not a goal, but it is a heart's desire. And really, to do serious clutter clearing and maintain a clutter-free home, you have to have a pretty strong heart's desire to keep doing something that's fairly boring and mundane and sometimes extremely overwhelming. Intentions are the motivation for the action, the quality of consciousness that you bring to an action. They're an inner commitment of the soul. When you set your intention, you set the universal law of attraction into motion, and you're informing the universe of what you want. It has an energy. An intention has an energy, and like energies attract. And if you put out there a positive, strong intention, you're very likely to find that what you need will start showing up in the form of new ideas, new connections, unexpected resources, and opportunities. Once you get clear about your intentions, setting goals and achieving them will be much easier. And when I was thinking about intentions, I think some of them can be pretty specific and some of them can be more general. Let me give you an example. A specific intention might be, I'm going to win the war with paper. It's not as specific as a goal like creating a filing system is a goal. But winning your war against paper is a more broad overview, but it's kind of specific. It's specific to paper. Another specific one is to maintain relative order all year long, focusing on order. A general intention, which is equally powerful, might be, I want to love my house again. I have clients who avoid their houses because they hate them, because they feel so bad. It might be this year you're setting your intention to love your house again, to do whatever it takes to love your house again. Or perhaps to create a calm, peaceful sanctuary free of clutter. Or create a home that has more positive energy than negative energy. So you can see that an intention is not a specific goal. It is an overarching kind of want. Now, I have an idea about how you can identify your intentions that I want to share with you. You may already know what your intentions are, but if you don't, and if this is hard for you, after this call sometime, get quiet, center yourself in relative quiet in your home, where you have the space all to yourself, and ask yourself what word or words will be your guide for this year? What word or words can you use as a guide for this year for what you want? And what you'll find is if you're calm enough and relaxed enough, words will pop into your head. When I did this, what came to me was, I want more space. And what I meant specifically was space in my schedule. I don't want to be scheduled back to back to back where I'm running from one thing to the next. I wanted space to have more time for reflection and writing. Another of mine, I don't really have clutter clearing intentions because that's just part of the way I live my life now. I don't really need them. Another was that I want to have adventures this year, new adventures. I want to have more awareness, more consciousness about making connections with, about what's happening in my life. And another word that came through loud and clear was global. I want to take the message, clear clutter for good, globally. So global is the way that I'm thinking, on a different level than just local Richmond. So those are some of my intentions for the year. And if you can't think of a line, like, I want to love my house again, see if you can identify a few words that actually hold the energy of what you want. And if you do that and find something interesting pops up, I hope you'll share it with me, because I'd love to share in your journey as you set your intentions and discover your intentions. They're really, really powerful. When I do feng shui with people, part of the feng shui process is set your intention for what you want. If you're clearing out a closet, the intention might be, I want to change this closet to be my husband's closet, or I want to get rid of a whole bunch of clothes. There's an intention. I want less extra stuff in my life. Set an intention for what you want, and it sets the universal law of attraction going, and you're more likely to attract exactly what you need. Now, another powerful thing to do with intentions is to share them with friends and family members. Just saying it, writing it down is really important because that anchors it at one level, but sharing it with somebody who might be checking in with you to see how you're doing and what's going on is another level of commitment to your intentions. Also, if you have an intention that involves clutter clearing and could possibly involve other family members in the process, I highly recommend that you share your intentions with family members and request their support and assistance. You will go much further, much faster with clutter clearing if you involve the people you live with, if you happen to live with somebody. If you involve them in the process in a request form, not telling them what to do or getting mad at them for not doing what you want them to do, but telling them what your intention is and asking for them to participate and to be helpful, and certainly not to contribute to more clutter. And, you know, one of the things, ideally, it depends on the relationships and it depends on the ages of the people in the family, you might come up with a family intention for maintaining order and beauty in your home. It's way easier to follow through with your intentions if you have other people supporting you. Now, when you write down your intentions, I recommend putting it somewhere where you can see it. My refrigerator still uses magnets. I don't have one of the new ones that magnets doesn't attach to. So I have important things like that on my refrigerator. But, you know, tape it to your desk or, you know, stand it upright in a frame or something like that so that when you're moving in an area that you see a lot, that you're reminded of your intention all the time. You don't lose sight of it. The problem with resolutions is you kind of say, okay, I'm going to do this. That's like setting a goal. And after a week, 2 weeks, you lose sight of it and nothing happens. This intention is powerful and really important, and you want to have it visible to cue you to continue to take action that will support the intention. The next thing I recommend is that you commit to daily maintenance of your space. Now, some of you probably have spaces that it, you know, it's hard to even care about maintaining because there's so much disorder in your space. And a lot of people, when the space has that much negative energy, will just go, what the heck, and, you know, really not make much of an effort to keep things up. Well, you're kind of burying yourself by doing that because things only get worse if you don't take action. And what I'm recommending is that, okay, maybe you do have a mess, but starting today, you're going to do some serious maintenance tasks so that things don't get any worse. And then you may have some motivation and energy to tackle the backlog after that. Now, the procrastinators of the universe and people who have ADD and people who are easily bored, which is someone with ADD, but really have a hard time with maintenance, which is the, what you do every day to maintain order, to keep up with your life and the stuff in your life. If that describes you, fight your procrastinator, your inner procrastinator, person who procrastinates those boring tasks. Commit to doing things even if they're boring, even if you're tired, and even if your space is already a mess. What you do every day makes a huge difference, even if you already have a mess, because you're lightening your load. You're refusing to have more negative energy accumulate in your space. It's so important. And then if you go and end up clearing significant parts of your space, if you have those maintenance behaviors, you'll be able to use them to maintain the order that you create. Really important to have daily maintenance tasks. Now, to do that, it means developing consistency in your habits. Some folks, the reason they have trouble with maintenance is their habits in that area are just not particularly good. Some of the most important habits are to pick up after yourself as you proceed through your home, as you proceed through your life, to pick up all the time, to put things away. Once you've used something, put it away within minutes. Not, oh, I'll do it later, but put it away. Now, if you're not set up to easily put things away, you might want to consider having someone come in and help you set up your space so that you can then easily pick up after yourself and put things away. Another really important maintenance task is cleaning up as you go. Some people will make a dinner and they cut all the stuff and they've got scraps of vegetables and dirty dishes and pans and things all over. It's a disaster. And what they've created is this overwhelming mess to clean up that will often shut people down. If they had been cleaning up as they were moving through the process of cooking, then at the end there would not be much to have to deal with. So I'm recommending that you see if you can make yourself clean up as you go. It's so much easier than cleaning up a big mess at the end. The most important maintenance task, though, is processing mail daily. And when I say processing mail, I mean you bring it in from the mailbox or somebody brings it in. And it goes to a location where it will be sorted. And ideally, it's sorted by the person who is most paper functional in your house, the person who understands the filing system if you have one, who is more conscientious about paper, who has a clue what to do with paper. Some people really don't. But you bring it in to a place and you sort it. And it might sort into recycle, refer out, action items, filing, and I'll go through those categories a little later, specifically discussing each one. But once you sort it into categories, then you move it to wherever it needs to go next. Some paper will go right into the recycling or the trash can. Other paper will go directly to wherever you pay bills. Some paper will go to where you leave it for your husband. But that's processing paper. It's you sort it and you move it to where it needs to go to be dealt with. That doesn't mean doing the tasks that are involved with the mail. It means just opening up everything, throwing out as much junk mail as you can, and moving paper to where it you will do the next step for it, whether it's filing, taking action, putting it in your reading pile, that kind of thing. So process mail daily. If you do it daily, it isn't overwhelming, unless you have you're a catalog collector or something, have tons of it. But, you know, they catalogs are easy compared to a lot of other paper mail. So every day, if you let it wait, even a couple of days, it begins to feel overwhelming and you'll procrastinate even more. Another maintenance task is throwing things in the trash. Now, that may, some of you are going, what? Doesn't everybody throw things in the trash? As soon as they identify something as trash, it goes right to the trash can? No, I can attest to the fact that some people have trash and they drop it on the floor or the counter or the table or the desk. And don't take that extra reach, extra couple of steps, and put it in the trash can or the recycling bin. Very common. I don't quite understand it because it feels so bad to have it lying around and out. It feels like something broken. But throwing things in the trash regularly, not setting them down somewhere else, but putting them in the trash, very important habit. And the last one is unpacking bags. A lot of people go to the grocery store, they go to CVS on the way home, and they don't completely unpack their bags. They just sit there. I find people with plastic bags hanging on their doorknobs that just haven't gotten open because what was in there wasn't urgent or didn't need to go into the refrigerator. The ideal is to bring things in, and as part of your evening routine, unpack whatever you bring in. Every day I unpack my lunch bag because when I'm in my car and I have trash or I have notes to myself that I want to deal with when I get home, they all go in my lunch bag. So in the evening, I make time and clear out the lunch bag and then make my lunch and move those papers and other items to where they need to go. If I go to the store, everything comes out of the bag right away. So unpack your bags. Also, if you travel and you come home, unpack your bags, and my recommendation is do it immediately. I always do it the same day I get back, because if it sits even overnight, it's interesting. Those bags become harder to unzip, and they seem to grow roots into the floor and are much harder to deal with. If you don't take advantage of the energy you have when you come home, and the reason they don't get done is because a lot of people are tired from traveling, I push myself through that fatigue because I want to ground myself when I get home. And the best way to do that is to unpack those bags and put them in the attic or wherever you store your bags, your luggage. So those are the main maintenance tasks that I recommend you work on your habits around those tasks. And if you know you need to do all of them because you're not really good at any of them, I recommend you start with one and then build onto that. One by one. Don't try to do them all at once or you will definitely fail. But if you're good at many of them and what's left is processing mail daily, then add that to your list of the daily maintenance tasks you're committing to do for the new year. Next, I recommend that you make managing paper a focus for the year. Unless you're already really organized and have no problems with paper, which for most people is not the case, it's a challenge for everybody, including me. I have to make that a focus all the time, or I would just say, heh, don't want to do paper, and it would build up quickly, and then I'd have a mess on my hands. If you change your behaviors about dealing with paper for the better, you will be lowering your stress exponentially and empowering yourself. Staying on top of paper is one of the best ways to feel in control and ready to handle any adversity. Make it a major clutter-clearing focus for the year. Now, paper may not be your thing, and you may not know how to deal with paper. If you don't, I highly recommend you consider hiring a professional organizer to teach you, to help you clear out what you have and set up a system that you can then use. A lot of people may not know how to set up a paper management system, but they can maintain it. If you're not good at maintaining paper management system, I recommend that you have somebody come set it up and you move paper to a specific spot and have somebody come in every other week and help you deal with your paper. I have one client who does about every 2 to 3 weeks I go in and I help him with his office paper and his home paper, and I actually help him pay his bills because paper is something he won't touch on his own. He'll procrastinate till he's in deep doo-doo with late fees and things like that. So you know probably what you need If you can't do it yourself, by all means, it's worth every penny you pay to get someone to come in and help you and get you set up to be successful with paper. Now, here are some ideas of the kinds of things that I think are important to know about paper. First is it's important to have a paper path and to honor it. And what I mean by a paper path is paper doesn't just come into your house and go poof and end up here, there, everywhere. If you're not deliberate with paper coming in, you'll end up with paper in all rooms and everything will feel bad because paper makes spaces feel bad instantly. It's negative energy when it's not organized and identifiable. It just feels really bad. So creating a paper path, for example, if you're going to create a paper path, you bring the mail in or somebody does, and everybody knows that it lands in one spot to be sorted. For me, it lands on the kitchen counter. And the person who, you know, the people who bring it in might just pull out their stuff and then leave it in a specific spot for the person who's going to sort the paper, usually one or the other of a couple if you're a couple. And you put it there to sort. Then you sort it, and then it moves deliberately to the next place. It might move to the home office because it's bills and items to be filed. Some of the paper will move to your reading pile. That's another a branch of the paper path. Some of it may move to a holding file where you keep tickets and things like that that you're going to want to grab when an event happens. Some of it, I have a place where I put mail for my husband. So you sort it out, but the paper follows deliberate paths. It doesn't end up in the bathroom, end up on the dining room table one day, end up in the family room or the living room the next day. Make a real deliberate attempt to move it to the next spot where something has to be done with it. This sounds so simple. If you're really good at paper, you're going, why is she telling me this? But it is not easy for people who have problems with focus, who have problems with boredom, who don't know how to make decisions about paper. So create a paper path and follow it. I also recommend that you share the path with others, or at least, at the very least, share with them where you want paper to land if they want you to deal with it. One place where incoming paper lands. Otherwise, you're going to resent people like crazy because it's landing in your chair one day, on your counter the next day, on your bed the next day. That's not a paper path. It should go to one place to be processed. I mentioned the importance of processing mail daily. Now I'm going to take a minute or two to talk to you about how paper sorts out. I use the TRAF system, and if you're taking notes, if you would write the letters TRAF vertically on a piece of paper, because that's an acronym that I stole from Stephanie Winston's book, The Organized Executive. And why reinvent the wheel, really sorting paper is not rocket science. So that's one that I find works really well. And then I added a few categories to that. So paper sorts like this. T stands for trash. 80 to 90% of what you go through with paper and what you file never gets touched again. 80 to 90% will never be touched again. So be looking for trash, or recycling falls into the same category. R stands for refer out. That's when something comes to you that belongs to your daughter, belongs to your husband, belongs at work, is something you might send to your mom or your sister. That's a refer out. And that's something that should go to wherever you'll take the next step to refer it out. If it's something you will mail, perhaps it ends up in your home office in your to-do pile because it's something to mail. If it's something that goes with you to work, you might put it with your belongings that go to work. So you put it in the direction you want it to go, because ideally you want refer out items to go away immediately. A is for action papers. This is the most important category of papers, actions. These are papers that require that you take an action to handle some part of your life. It might be the action is to RSVP, to an invitation, or register for a class, or read about insurance opportunities and make a decision about how to upgrade your insurance. A paper that tells you need to write a note to somebody, maybe a letter from your sister and you want to answer her back. That's an action item. Now, action items actually sort into two categories, bills and other actions. I recommend keeping bills separate, completely separate. And it might be that if you have a check statement from your bank, that's an action, that's a money action that would go with the bills because it's all kind of the same category. So it's sort of a money action pile and then other actions. You really want, we have much more peace of mind when our money situation is straight. And if you're funneling paper directly to a money action pile or a bills action pile, you'll know where your bills are when it's time to pay them. You'll know where the things are that you need to take the next action. And then the other action pile can be miscellaneous actions. And the F of the TRAF acronym is for filing. Now, some people don't file, they pile. Regardless, the things that land in the filing category are papers that you will use for reference again, that you really think there's a high probability you'll want to access them again to retrieve some information, to get some documentation of something you did, that kind of thing. In some cases, I don't really recommend you do this. People, as reference, will have little articles and things, and then most of the time they don't get filed, and they end up in kind of a mess. I highly recommend you don't keep lots of little articles, because most everything you want to find these days can be searched on the Internet, and it's much easier to find it there than it is in piles kind of scattered all over the place. Another option for those articles kinds of things, rather than putting it in a regular filing system, is to get an accordion file that is labeled A to Z and file it by category or topic within that accordion file, and have that file just be for your little cut up pieces of paper from the magazines and newspapers. So that's filing. Ideally, file as you go. Don't let filing get older than 1 week. Otherwise, it's going to be harder and harder to make yourself file. When you keep it smaller, you're more likely to do it. Keep the pile or the stack smaller. Now, I add to that reading, holding, and possibility. Now, a reading item is something that you read just for pleasure or because you're interested, it's not something that you need to read to take action. Anything that you need to read to make a decision to take an action is something that belongs in the action pile. I'm talking about the newsletters, the catalogs, the magazines, newspapers. Those are reading items. And I recommend that those be stored off of your desk in an area where you're likely to read. For some that's the bathroom. Some that's a basket near your chair where you sit. A few pieces in the bedroom is not bad. Just don't put much reading in the bedroom or you won't sleep very well because you'll be sleeping with the content. So reading is another sort. Holding is the holding file or pile, however you decide to do it, is for things that come in. You've either taken an action or waiting for somebody to get back to you. For example, you have placed an order and you're waiting to receive the order and you don't want to forget that you ordered something, that would go into holding. Or if you bought tickets for a play or an event, you could put them in your holding file because if that's your go-to file for any events, it is a holding kind of thing. You're waiting for the event to come up, for the date to come. I put directions to weddings and specific events, workshops, things that I'm going to in my holding file. Anything that you're going to likely come back to access again, and then after you've accessed it, you're either going to trash them or you're going to file them. So a holding is that sort of intermediate kind of place for things. I keep my holding papers standing vertically in my step sorter, an open filing system on my desk, at the back of that file. So I see them all the time, so I don't really lose sight of them. And periodically when I'm looking for something in them, I'll go through the whole thing and clear out the dead stuff, because actually the holding, it will go dead over time. Let me go on to possibilities. Possibilities is a category for those things that you don't know what to do with, things that you might want to go and purchase something, or you might want to attend an event. They're the I might, maybe, but I can't make up my mind right now kind of things. And what I recommend is you separate them from filing, you separate them from actions, and store them somewhere, a file at the front of a filing drawer or a particular a bin all by themselves. Because I don't have a whole lot of possibilities, I store them with my holding items because I can go through both of them quickly. But it's clearer if you keep them completely separate, because possibilities will die faster than holding items. In other words, they die when you've made up your mind, you know you're not going to buy something. And so that's how paper sorts out. Trash, refer out, action, filing, reading, holding, and possibility. So sort your mail and daily move it along to where it needs to go next. Now, I mentioned a few minutes ago you want to separate possibilities out from action papers. I actually recommend that you keep action papers in one or two locations in your home, places where you're likely to take action. The most common places are the desk, if you have a home office, or for some women in particular, they use the kitchen counter because they spend a lot of time operating out of the kitchen, and that's where the phone is, and they might have an action pile there. And action papers shouldn't be mixed with anything else. They should be separate from reading, filing, and possibilities. So and kept in one or two places only, so that when you're looking for what do I need to do, you've got one place to go, and it's all about action. It's not mixed up with other things that can be distracting. Also, enlist help from others who contribute to paper clutter challenges. You know, you may have children that are kind of messy, and you first of all, with your spouse and your children, let them know your goal this year is to keep your paper under control, and you need their help. Inform them of where you'd like the paper coming in to be left for you to look at if they need for you to do something with it. And ask them to take their own papers to their room and not leave them around the house. And I would say ask them. Ask for their cooperation. Tell them it's really important to you. People will respond much better when you ask for their help. You might need to remind them that that's what you want to, because people don't always get it the first time. Another real important thing about getting a handle on paper is creating or using a filing system. Filing or a good piling system. For those of you who are horizontal filers who need to see things, have them more visible, it is possible to set up a horizontal system that can work, but you might need help to do that. If you're using a filing system or a piling system, it's going to up the possibility that you'll be able to find what you need when you need it. Now, if paper is not your friend, if paper is your nemesis, it is the demon in your life that drives you nuts and makes you feel totally inadequate, and you can't make yourself do anything different with your paper despite setting many intentions and at many times of trying to do it, get some help. Enlist the help of a professional organizer. Professional organizers can do it with you. They can teach you how to do it. They can follow up and tweak systems so that they work better for you. They also are able to assess whether you're capable, given the way your brain is wired, of doing it very well yourself, and can talk about other options for handling paper. So those are my paper recommendations. I recommend that you make paper a major focus. Now, the next area. So far, I have recommended that you set your intentions, commit to daily maintenance of your space, make paper, managing paper, a real focus. And number four, I recommend that you guard the door. Control incoming. A lot of us, I mean, and I was this way too before I started doing this work, we're just not even paying attention to what's coming into the house. And more stuff will come in, and usually the balance of what comes in is higher than what goes out. And all of a sudden you're going, how did this happen? But I recommend that you watch. How are things coming into your space? Observe. Get conscious about incoming. And not only how it's coming in, but what is coming in. What types of things. Because you can't change anything until you can see what's actually happening. Another way to guard the door is don't shop for fun. Shop only when you really need something. Because shopping brings more bags in your house. It brings more stuff in your house. And unless you're really conscientious about every time I bring in a couple new pieces of clothing, I put out two or more, the shopping will just fill up your space. Don't shop in bulk unless you have plenty of storage space for the bulk items. A lot of people go to Sam's or Costco and buy in bulk and have no room to put the quantity that they've had to buy in those places. I don't have much storage space. I don't buy bulk items anymore at BJ's, which is where I shop, because I just don't have the space for it. What I buy there are, you know, a bag of grapefruit, you know, things that I can easily store. So you can get conscious of, are you buying in bulk, not even thinking about where is it going to go. You definitely want to make sure you have storage. Another suggestion is that you not bring home paper that you will never use. A lot of us don't even think about that. Paper is in our briefcase, or it's in our bag, or on the car seat beside us. We bring it all in. Well, if it's not paper that you're likely to use again, I recommend leaving it where you picked it up. I mean, if you were given handouts and you don't want the handouts, leave them there at the seminar. If your insurance guy hands you a wad of paper, which they're required to do for compliance, and you know you're never going to read the stuff again, just quietly drop it in the trash can as you leave the space. When you're at church and you have a bulletin, leave the bulletin at church. They can reuse it for the next service, or they can recycle it. Don't bring it home. A lot of times when you get a bank account, they give you all this stuff they have to give you for compliance reasons, explaining the rates and all that stuff, that you will never look at again. Be real discerning about what you get handed and whether it really belongs in your home. The only paper that should be coming into your home is paper you need to take action on, paper that you will use in some way. So minimize the amount of paper coming in. That will make your job of dealing with paper so much easier. If it comes in and unconsciously and all of a sudden it's there and you know it's useless, immediately put it in the trash or in recycling. Now, the area where it's particularly hard to say no is when you're being offered belongings of a deceased family member, and that's where I see a lot of clients get hung up. What I recommend is, if you can say no, no, it won't fit in my house, or no, it wouldn't go with my furniture, or no, I don't fit the same size my mother does. I mean, if you can say no, go for it. And I am already mentally thinking about what I'll bring into my house when my mom goes into assisted living or dies. I've already made decisions about what's staying, what's going to Goodwill, and in my head, I'm planning that so that when the time happens that she's gone and I'm in an emotional turmoil, I won't have to make all those decisions with a grieving brain. but if you can't say no at the time because the grief is so bad and it's just everything's so overwhelming, what I recommend, if at all possible, keep the belongings of the deceased family member in one area instead of spreading them through the house. What happens is people end up with stuff in four or five different rooms, and it's like having mom's energy everywhere. And that energy will keep them shut down and unable to accomplish things in those spaces, because everywhere they look, they're assaulted by things that bring back the sadness. If it's possible, if you have a corner of the garage, you can put them all in until you're ready to deal with them. I recommend they stay together so that person's energy stays together until you're really ready to make decisions. Now, if you know you have a piece of furniture that you definitely have want and you know exactly where it's supposed to go, by all means, put it there. But the things that you're uncertain that you want or don't know what to do with, kind of try to clump them all together until your emotions settle. Okay, that was my fourth recommendation. The fifth is commit to constant purging. So the fourth was control the incoming. Fifth is commit to outgoing, to making things leave. My challenge for you this year is to see if you can change the balance from more coming in than going out to more going out than coming in. That's hard to do because things come in so easily. But if you set your intention for more going out than coming in, you certainly are going to be in better shape. Even if you don't quite accomplish that, you're headed in the right direction. I also recommend that you make it a family focus, that you set the example of regularly finding things to donate, regularly clearing out areas and trashing things. What happens when you do that is energy shift from the changes you're making, and very often it will affect the people around you. And it, you know, they'll all of a sudden be motivated to do some of their own clearing. It really is contagious. When the energy starts shifting, they are more likely to do it if you're doing it first. So make it a family focus. Talk about it. Let's have the house be peaceful and calm this year. Let's all work together. And one way we can do that is to get rid of more stuff all the time. Now, with young people, with children, especially adolescents, you need to be very specific about where you want them to put things that they're purging, because they don't really think about other people much. They're kind of in adolescence or in a very self-focused part of their life. And what they tend to do is just drop it wherever it's convenient. It might be inside their bedroom door. It might be in the hall. A lot of people drop it in mom's bedroom, which I don't get. That's a fairly disrespectful kind of thing to do. But you really need to inform them of where you want them to put the things they're ready to part with. And some moms really need to review what the children are getting rid of, because you might be able to pass them on to other kids. So it's good to have one place where they can put them, then you can review them, and then move them along. and I don't know if both charities are doing this anymore, but there are two charities in town that deliver bags to your home. American Vets, Disabled Vets. One is AmVets and the other is Disabled Vets or something like that. There are two of them. The bags are yellow and pink. When I get one of those bags, I put it in a spot, visible spot in my house, and I have my eyes open for anything that might need to go. Anytime I'm in a drawer, a closet, I'm looking for things to go in that bag. And every time a bag comes in, something leaves in that bag. So look for opportunities to purge. Also, churches very often request donations for auctions or for a church flea market or yard sale. Anytime one of those things comes up, look for things to get rid of. Commit to a donation location, creating a donation location. And by that, pick a place in your house where you can put a bag or a box. In my case, I don't have enough room in my closet here in my office, but so I put the items individually in there because I get rid of them very quickly. They don't build up very long before I'm putting them in a bag. But I have one place where when I have something to get rid of, it goes right to that place so that when the bag comes along, I can put it in. and constantly be on the lookout for items to donate all the time. Make that a habit. And the question to ask yourself is, do I love it? Do I use it? Items that aren't loved or used don't have positive energy that makes them worthy of staying in your space. So anywhere you're going, whether it's neat or messy, look for items to purge. A lot of times we aren't purging things because they've just gone off the radar. But if you set an intention to be more observant, to be looking for things to purge, you're more likely to do it. You might start a new habit of purging weekly, even if it's half a bag to Goodwill. Make a decision that every week I'm going to do some purging. When you, most of us, many of us probably do some cleaning up on the weekend, because during the week we're running as fast as we can. Things get left out and, you know, are a little messy. When you clean up on the weekend, check everything out and see whether it can be purged or not. And that's a great time to just poke your head in a closet or a drawer and see if you can find something else to purge. Then take the bag directly to your car, and so it's ready to be dropped off at Goodwill. Goodwill is great because they have so many trucks and stores all over that it's easy to find one to drop it off. Perhaps you set a goal of finding at least 9 items per week that you're going to donate. And on Monday morning, they go out to your car. So, important thing is to start now. You might get all jazzed when I'm talking to you. But if you don't do something immediately, like within the next 24 hours, you might not do it at all, because you'll lose the energy, you'll lose the momentum. Now, I want to finish up here, and I'm going to have a few minutes for you to ask questions, by making sure you all know about the partnership I've established with Goodwill for the month of January. January is Get Organized Month, and in this month, Goodwill and the, I've changed the name of the online community to Clear Clutter for Good online program. We are getting together with Goodwill to partner to see if we can clear clutter for good, increase the donations to Goodwill, and at the same time help people improve their lives by getting rid of things. And we have an incentive program, a reward program. If you donate 4 times to Goodwill in January at one of the 4 participating stores in the Richmond area, you then qualify for 20% off your entire purchase at Goodwill. You will have access to the Clear Clutter for Good online toolkit, which my partner Teresa and I are putting together, which is going to have a couple of audio CDs that we've created, a Clear Clutter for Good ebook, and my feng shui booklet. And there's one more thing that I can't think. Oh, a quick start guide for clutter clearing and a donation tip list. So it's what we are calling a toolkit. You'll get that. And your name would be put in for a drawing for a $1,000 grand prize that we've come up with. It includes a 2-hour organizing consultation with me, a Goodwill gift card, and a 4-hour eco-friendly house cleaning, and some other things to make getting organized easier. So I want to make sure you know about that, so that to find out where the participating Goodwills are, you can go to letcluttergo.com, which is the easiest way to get to the online membership site, and go to the Goodwill page. And it explains all of this, explains the locations. I'm also doing 4 seminars this month about using feng shui to clear clutter at those 4 Goodwill locations. So if you want to come hear me talk again, you can find me there, and you can register on the site. So, questions. I'm ready for questions. No questions. How about intention?
You're so thorough, Debbie. You know, I'm like going, I can't think of anything to ask. This is Nancy.
Yes.
My only thing, I love your idea about Goodwill. But they're so far from where I live. Yeah. Will you do anything like closer to like the west end of Richmond? Because I'm out in Goochland, Louisa area. And actually, I don't know if they've opened it yet, but they're building a Goodwill in Mannequin Sabbat, which is like right where I shop, you know, my grocery store.
Yeah. And that's not one of the participating ones. For some reason, I didn't pick the stores. Goodwill got to pick the stores. I don't know why we don't have one in the West End. We've got one in Mechanicsville. We have one in Chester. And we have 2 in Midlothian area.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. They were the ones who were calling the shots about where they could be. So so I'm sorry. You can still attend one of my seminars if you're willing to drive.
Right.
That's completely open to you. But yeah, it is a bit of a commitment to make that drive. Or if you find yourself going over that part of town, you know, if you have something you've got to do on the south side, use that as your incentive to give yourself a deadline to fill a bag, you know,
right,
and
right.
see how that goes.
Okay, and I'm a bit confused. So we're not calling ourselves the Clutter Free Community anymore?
No, I mean, we Clutter Clearing Community. No,
Clutter Clearing Community. Okay.
The focus
okay.
has really shifted to clear clutter for good, because
right. well, that's good.
Good for
I like
you,
that.
Good for your family, and good for the community. Because really, when you're clearing clutter, you're doing good on many levels. And so we have kind of gotten more specific about our focus.
Gotcha.
I appreciate your clarifying that. Anybody
else? Have
you
changed the website for signing up for classes or?
No. You can still go to the clutterclearingcommunity.com or to letcluttergo.com. Either one will get you there.
Okay.
And there, you just go to the events section and sign up there.
Events. Okay.
Yeah. And if you're on my mailing list, all of these events probably will be coming out in the form of either in my newsletter, where there'll be a link, or in a reminder of my seminars too. So there are a couple ways to get registered.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Debbie, this is Belinda. When when your membership is up, what happens? Will it be the same type of fees and charges, or a different program under the same program under the different name, or?
It's the same program under the different name.
Okay.
We think that the way that the site works is that you'll get an automatic reminder to renew, and then you just, you know, you pay online and renew just the same. And if I'm not right about this, Teresa, please chime in. But that should, you should be asked to renew automatically. And we haven't changed our rates. We did have a special over the Christmas holiday where you could, you know, the membership was reduced as part of a promotion that we were doing. But the rates are staying the same in the new year, I think. Teresa, if I'm wrong about that, remind me too.
Yeah, now that's right, Debbie. Everything stays the same, and the renewal should all still be the same.
Okay.
I have one comment about one thing you said that resonated with me is that I truly believe, I consider myself a smart person, but I cannot get on top of paper. I really do have a problem with that. At my desk at school, at home, that it overwhelms me.
Yeah, ditto.
I guess I never thought about it before. Like, you know, maybe that just is an area that I can't handle.
Well, and that is a fact for some people, and it really is a wiring thing. It's also an ability to deal with negative energy, because the energy coming off of this disorderly paper is really negative. And without working with you, it's hard for me to tell. You know, when I work with someone, I can usually discern what the problem might be. And for a lot of people I will say that they're a category of people who, if they have someone like me come in and help them set up a system, and it's real clear what they do with paper every day, and they have some discipline, I mean, they really make it a point every day, at least for a month, to do what I recommend, then they can kind of get a handle. They just need to have it set up, and then every day be diligent about following through with managing it. You just miss one day and you're off track. I mean, it really takes incredible discipline to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do you have a hard time setting up? Do you have a hard time maintaining? Or do you have a hard time with both set up and maintaining?
Both.
And some people, they just say, the heck with it. I accept that my brain is not really wired for paper. I'm going to get help once a month to restore order. And you know what happens when they work with me over time? They learn it at a different level. And they find that they can do more on their own than they could before, just because the repetition of doing it helps.
Sure,
so,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's the toughest area of things to organize, but it will cause you more stress than anything if it's not. So it is worth considering having a consultation with me or another organizer to get your paper straight and to learn some of the hands-on, in-your-face principles. I can tell you what to do, but translating that to action is a different thing. Some people, they can visualize it, they go and do it. But for other people, it's like, well, God, it made sense on the phone, but I have no clue what to do right now. Plus, when I work with people, I use strategies to make the paper not so overwhelming that when we're doing it, I can show you, you know, by straightening paper out into neat piles and by pulling the big things out first and just the ways that I do it so I keep myself from being overwhelmed. And you learn that in the process of working with an organizer. It's a great investment in your sanity and in feeling competent, because when people can get their paper where they can find what they need when they need it, their competence, their feelings about themselves, their self-esteem goes up notches.
Hmm. Where can you use some of that?
Yeah, especially you teachers, which is so paper intensive. It is crazy. It is just crazy. And I help people figure out how to deal with those volumes in strategic ways. You know, a lot of times that's what it takes. It's like graduate level paper when you're a teacher.
Mm-hmm. So. When you do it all day, I work all day in an office and I struggle to keep everything managed there and everything done, and I have no energy left for when I get home.
Who am I talking to right now?
This is Patricia.
Patricia, okay. I knew that was a voice that I wasn't quite familiar with. Okay. Thank you for sharing that, Patricia. Yeah, you bet. When you have a tired brain, dealing with paper is not a great thing. Other than processing it first thing and moving it to where it needs to go, then I'd recommend not doing anything until the weekend.
That's my new thing. Mail comes in, I take it and file it right away, or either the trash can, which is right at the door. Got a table right at the door. And this week is to at least spend 15 minutes when I get home. I think I have enough energy for that. That's what I'm going to start with.
Well, good luck. Paper would not be my first choice for what to spend time on for clutter clearing. It would be anything but paper, and then do paper on the weekend when you're fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're sort of setting yourself up. At the end of the day, nobody wants to do more than a few minutes of paper, like processing paper and then stopping.
Mm-hmm.
Because our brains are done at the end of the day. And you really need a fully firing brain to do paper. Well, we've reached the end of our time. I want to sum up with encouraging you to remember the five basic areas that I'm recommending for your clutter clearing plan for 2013. Set your intentions, get a handle on paper, control incoming, constantly purge, and start now. Clear clutter for good. So
bless you.
I wish you well this year, and please keep me informed about your progress and how you're doing, or if you're struggling, please let me know. I'm happy to help you tweak whatever you're doing.
Thank you so much, Debbie. It was really great to hear from you again. And
thank you.
I'm recommitted. You have helped me recommit.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Everybody take care.
Bye-bye. You too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome.